Good morning. It is such a blessing and honor to be here with you this morning. It was great to watch that video again for the fifth time, and I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I have. It has been a wild ride planting a church and starting Impact Church, and throughout this last year, I've been sent as a guest speaker to all of our sponsoring churches, and that has just been such a humbling and impactful experience just to connect that you're our church family. And it took me an hour and a half to get here and a panic attack across that bridge, but you're our church family, and you just feel so much closer, and it's a lot more tangible for me to be able to experience that. So thank you so much. I also wanted to point out, the people in that video were not part of our core launch team. And that's just been such an amazing thing to see. When you first think about church planning and, oh, we're going to go into this community, and you look around and there's 10 other churches, and you think, what impact can I make? There's a church here, here, here on every corner. And isn't everybody already in church? No, they're not. And so it's amazing to be able to see in just a year's time people who have found Impact Church who have never walked through church doors before. And now they're serving. People who have maybe church-hopped their whole life, and they finally found a home, and they're getting baptized, and they're serving for the first time in their life. So it's amazing what God can do with a church plant and through your awesome faith and dedication. So thank you all. And as a guest speaker, the first thing I really like to do is to get to know each other and for you to get to know me a little bit. And so I'm going to share with you one of the most intimate, scary stories of my life, and you're not going to tell anybody, okay? It's going to stay in this room, and I've sworn my family and friends to secrecy over this story, and I swore I wouldn't tell anybody else, but I kind of like to share it when I'm guest speaking, because maybe the people that you're going to tell, I won't know them, and they won't know me, and that'll be fine. Is this live on Facebook? Every time. All right, fine, it's out there. All right, so I'm going to share this story with you. As long as it doesn't come with too much judgment, I know what I've done. I've set myself up for some criticism here. But has anybody ever lost something before? Or are you that person? I'm that person. I'm that person on another level. And I'm just going to share with you the famous story of the lost keys at Safeway. And so to add some context here and to add some pity from you all on me, I was very pregnant, having a baby any minute, and I was doing my last grocery store run before I was about to have my daughter Lucy a couple years ago. And so I went out to the Safeway in Columbia, Maryland. They now know me very well. And I'm shopping, very, very pregnant, remember, so mad, and imagine waddling, shopping. And I get a very important work call, had to take the call, and so I'm on the phone. I'm trying to multitask, also something I'm not really famous for being able to do, but by the end of the call, I look down and I've made some progress in my cart. I've got some produce there, I always hit that first. I've got apples, bananas, oranges, all the really healthy things, and I'm just doing a once-over. I just breezed in the Safeway and just kind of didn't even think, you know, okay, I've got my phone, I've got the groceries, and I've got my reusable bags, right? I'm sort of responsible. Just check one off. She uses reusable bags. And I had something else in this hand. I already gave it away. The keys. And now that feeling's missing. I don't have that weight in my hand. The keys. Okay, no big deal. I'm just going to rummage through the bags. Maybe they're in there. No, maybe they're in the cart. They did that. They fell through the cart and they're hanging at the bottom. No, didn't do that either. I don't carry a purse. So I just kind of carry things. And so I don't have them anywhere. That's okay. Let's retrace my steps. I got apples, bananas, oranges. Okay, I'm just going to go back to the bananas. I'm going to go back to the apples. I'm going to go back to the oranges. I look a little weird because those things are already in my cart, and I'm just circling around. The custodian notices how odd that is and says, hey, do you need any help? With a lot of things. How long do you have? But right now, I can't find my keys. And then he said, did you think go look where you've been? Genius. Do you want help? And so now I've got the custodian going around to the apples and the bananas and the oranges. And at this point, other shoppers are kind of like putting things back. Like, something's wrong with the apples, bananas, and oranges. So I'm panicking, and he's helping me. He's so sweet. But I've kind of taken him from his job, and the manager noticed. So the manager comes over. Hey, do you need any help with anything? Notice Joe, the custodian's with you and not doing his job. Yeah, I lost my keys. Very, very pregnant, guys, about to go into labor. Remember this as I tell the story. And then so the manager says, oh, let me help you out. Have you checked your bags? So she starts checking the bags, and she starts checking the produce. And now there's three of us checking the produce. And so another thing you need to know about me is I think of the worst case scenario, the worst possible, what could it be? Someone stole the keys. That's what it is. Someone stole them. If I don't have them and they're not in the apples, bananas, or oranges, somebody stole them. A bad man watched me on the phone and followed me around and said, she's going to get distracted. She's going to put her keys down, and then I'm going to take them. And then he took them. And I'm sexist. Women can steal things. So yes, somebody, a bad man, stole the keys. And now I've got to go out to the car, because it's one of those boop, boop, and then the car opens, and so all it takes is for them to just, and then the car would open. I should also share with you, it wasn't my car. So this was my aunt and uncle's really expensive Volvo that they let me have because they deemed my car not safe enough for very pregnant me. And so I had to go out to the parking lot and be one car down, right, so not to be suspicious. I've thought this through. So I'm one car down from the Volvo waiting for the bad man. And I've got no other strategies. All of Safeway is looking for the keys. So I call my uncle in a panic, and I say, oh, I run down the situation. I'm stuck in the parking lot now. Safeway is looking for the keys. I need you to man this position for me so that I can go back in and keep looking. So he comes from work to stand at the second car over so that I can go back into the Safeway and kind of problem solve with people. I've got one last possible idea for how I can control the situation. And I share with the manager, I've got it. I know how we can catch the bad man. We can look at the security footage. And then we can see who took the keys, or at the very least, see where I put them. Can we please look at the security footage? Or I'm not getting out here. You're going to have to just tell me what rent is, and then I live here now. Can we look at the security footage, please? And so she says, we actually don't even have access to the security footage ourselves. You'd have to get the police involved for that. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. So, but not like the 911 number, the local number. So I called the local number, shared how very pregnant I was, and that I've lost my keys, and I'm 99.9% sure somebody stole them, and there's somebody here to catch. And so the police come. And they're talking about getting the security footage. This is all real. And now they're having their powwow, all of Safeway looking for the keys, and my uncle. And so I'm in there and just kind of letting it all happen. And finally, the manager just comes over to me, and she said, did you check like the produce? You checked where you were? Yes, ma'am, I did. Did you check your bags? Yeah, we all did. We all checked the bags. Well, maybe we should just check things again. So in one of my reusable bags, there was a zipper front thing, and you unzip and you slip your hand down, and there is both joy for finding the thing that you lost and shame because there are police there and your uncle who took off work and all of Safeway. And I pull the keys out and I say, found them. And then everyone got to go home. Real story, I lose things in a big way. And those of you who raised your hand, maybe I made you feel a little bit better that you haven't done that. You haven't called the police for the keys that you lost. So I lose things. We all lose things. It's very much human nature. You know, keys, phone, wedding rings, four-year-olds. My child is the reason why they make the backpacks with the leashes. So please do not judge those parents. Thank you. So we lose some big things too. Sometimes it is replaceable things. But sometimes we lose irreplaceable things, right? There are devastating losses in our lives. And even just being here in your church for the last hour or so, I've heard some very deep prayer requests that are needed here in this church family. And that's true for everyone. Devastating losses, losses of a job, losses of a relationship, losses of a loved one. And so maybe some of us, you've been through a season of loss. You've just kind of lost your footing. You've lost your confidence. you could think back to times in your life where you've had it all figured out. Life was going your way, you'd done everything right, and then, like the magicians who whooshed the tablecloth, right? You were just assigned a really bad magician, and your life is just everywhere on the table, and things are on the floor, and you're not sure how it's really fair because, again, you keep telling yourself, I did everything right. How is this gone? How do I not have this anymore? I'm sure if I took time to sit down with every single one of you, you would all have a story to tell me. Maybe it's something that you're going through now. Maybe it's something that you've been through. There is bad news from a doctor or a bad report at work. That confidence that you had is gone. And so in the same way that every single one of you could probably name that thing, and you're not short on loss, in the same way, God's scripture is not short on promises that can fill that gap and can fill that loss. So we're going to read actual promises today from God to his people in scripture. So our bottom line today, I'm going to give it away, is that the Lord provides. That's our promise from God that I want to make sure you have that ingrained in your heart every single day. The Lord provides. I'm sure you've heard it before. I'm sure this is not a very newsy message for you and that you've been through church sermons before, a Bible study, or a worship song somewhere, and you have heard the Lord provides. But the reason why it's so important, if you forget this one principle, your entire life will spin out of control. I don't care how mature of a Christian that you are. I don't care how many times we've been in church, if you've been raised in church, or if this is your first day in church. If you forget even for a moment that the Lord provides, you can lose everything. And decades of a foundation in truth, decades of a foundation in church teaching can be wiped out, that bad magician with the tablecloth right out from under you if you forget that the Lord provides. Let's let that really sink in. And some of us got like a warm, fuzzy feeling, yeah, the Lord provides, I get it. And we think, he's got it, he's got my back, you're right. And some of us have really easy ways that we've seen that in our life. So I just want to say the Lord provides even when he does things the way maybe we don't want him to. It's a little clunky, but that is how we have to think about that because some of you have some easy ways that you could piece that together that the Lord provides. My husband has a really great example. He works in construction for a living. He's the worship leader at our church, and if you asked him what he'd want to do for a living, musician, no one pays for that. So for his full-time job, he works in construction. He's outside in the elements on roofs, doing siding and decks and all the things. Brother services, call him up, give him some work. And so it means that he's out there in the hot days and the cold days, but on the days when it rains, there's no work. You can't get anything done in the rain. And I don't know if you've noticed, but we can't exactly budget out for when there's going to be a rain day, right? Like that's a really tricky thing to plan for. And so he'll have days when, okay, well, a hurricane came in and now, you know, it's raining for a week and there's no work. But then God always provides. The next week, bright, shiny out, and somehow he's gotten paid twice as much for a job that wasn't supposed to pay this, but now he's paid that. And so we can kind of look at that and say, wow, instant connection. The Lord provides. Yes, I get it. Check. Everyone can go home. And then there are some people in the audience saying, now, wait a minute. It's not that easy. And you know what? We've experienced that too in our family. That is just not always how it works. It didn't work out for us the year that our son Joel went to the hospital the same week we lost our health insurance. Thousands of dollars later, we didn't feel the Lord's provision. We didn't win the lottery that magically put the thousands of dollars back in, right? And that is not how it's worked for me and my family sometimes. That I really wish I could say that the Lord provided for some family situations. My grandfather, we lost him to cancer out of nowhere. We thought he was in remission. We got all sorts of great reports. He was home. He was off of all of the life support that he needed. And things were looking up. And all of a sudden, I get a call at work saying, Grandpa's back in the hospital, and we're going to leave him on life support until you can make it up here. And it was just like that overnight. My uncle he was as old as my dad, and we lost him to a heart attack while he was mowing the lawn. Just out of nowhere, overnight losses, and I don't have those people in my life anymore. There's no swapsies for that, right? There's no getting my uncle back. There's no getting my grandfather back. And loss can work like that sometimes. And as a church, I want us to be honest about those feelings. I don't want us to gloss over loss and say, yep, and then you're just going to be provided that again, and then you just get a whole new whatever it is. There are real losses that you feel like sometimes you just lose. And I'd like us to be honest about that today. And we're going to use an Old Testament scripture. It is a classic one. And we're going to discover, or for some of us, rediscover, how the Lord provides in our lives, even when it honestly doesn't feel like it. So today we're going to look at Genesis chapter 22, the story of God calling Abraham to sacrifice his son Isaac. If you're the kind of person who likes to read along, I'll give you time to pull that up. It starts right in the beginning of the chapter. We're going to put it on the screen, and I think it's also in your bulletins. Thank you. So Genesis chapter 22, verse 1. If you're a note taker, get ready, because this is a really awesome story. So we're going to dive pretty deep into one of the most dramatic stories in the Old Testament. I mean, they're all pretty dramatic. I think some movies have been made out of them. It's really a great plot twist for some of these. I have to admit, though, since apparently I'm sharing all sorts of transparent honesty with you, I have never really liked this story very much. Growing up, hearing the story in church, hearing pastors tackle it, it just made me uneasy. And so we'll get into why that is. It made me a little uncomfortable. I often hear messages where pastors will use this story to identify what is our Isaac, right? What's our Isaac that we don't want to give up, that we don't want to sacrifice? And I think that that's a valid message and a valid way to speak into that. But last year, when I lost my uncle, God brought this story back in front of me. And he showed me something that was there that I had never seen before. And so I knew any time that I was a guest speaker anywhere, I had to share this with people. I had to show what was buried in the story that I maybe never wanted to see, or that I just wasn't able to see. So I've been able to see this story in a whole new way and give it some context, and then we're just going to read the whole story. We're just going to dive right in. So So Abraham was a descendant of Shem, one of Noah's sons. His name was originally Abram, which God would later change to Abraham. The first time we see God talking to Abram was when he called him away from his home, his family, everything he knew, because God promised Abraham that if he'd follow him, he would bless him and make him to a great nation. For some of you, we're recapping this. You know all of this. I'm assuming, what if it's somebody's first time in church? You got to know this. So without hesitation, Abraham picked up his life at 75 years old. He followed God, took his wife and his nephew with him. He walked. Think about that. It's not traveling in a car. He walked for a while. No GPS, right? Just faith. God promised he and his wife Sarah in their old age would have children, which seemed impossible. Abraham followed God's command to get circumcised at 99 years old. Thank you. And then he had to circumcise his son Ishmael at 13. Okay. Abraham, where were you on that one? Abraham watched God destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And then some weird family drama happened, and we're about to pick up into this story. So finally, Isaac, Abraham's promised son, was born to Sarah, and Father Abraham had many sons. Good job, church. Good job. So we're in chapter 22. We pick up in Abraham's life. It's a classic story. Many of you have heard it. It's when Abraham's faith is tested. So we're going to pick up in verse 1. Sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, Abraham, here I am, he replied. Then God said, take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you. Pause for the people who it's first day in church. Yes. God asked Abraham to sacrifice his son, and sacrifice in the way that you're thinking, in the same way that they would sacrifice animals, right? that's some deep stuff. That's what makes me so uncomfortable about this story. So I'm aware that this sounds crazy. Now let's jump back in. So verse 3, early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship and then we will come back to you." Could you mark that for me? Someone underline that if you brought a pen to church. Verse 6, Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. Pause there too for a minute. Whoa, this is potentially this kid's last moments. He is potentially about to be sacrificed, and dad's making him carry the wood and the knife and the fire for his own sacrifice. Give the kid a break. Could you at least carry it for him? That, to me, is a very intense moment. And Isaac's no dummy. Here's what he says. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, "Father." "Yes, my son," Abraham replied. "The fire and the wood are here," Isaac said. "But where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Ooh, do you hear the movie music? That's an intense moment. Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And the two of them went on together. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand, took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." "Here I am." "Thank you." "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." One of these from Abraham, right? Abraham looked up, and there in a thicket, he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide." And to this day it is said, on the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. Church, this is an ultimate test of faith, if I have ever heard one. The text does not give a lot of emotion, right? Abraham received this call, this ask from God to sacrifice your only son, and it didn't say he hesitated. It didn't say he wrote a pro-cons list. It didn't say he journaled his feelings. It said he got up and he got ready for the day and he did it. So we don't see any emotion there. And parents in the room, I know our heads are spinning. This is a real raw story. There might have been emotion there. I know that there would be for you or I if we got that message from God, right? So that just must not have added up in Abraham's mind. "You blessed me with this son. This was my son that you told me I would have, this son who has loved me. I'm supposed to make great nations out of him. How can I make great nations out of him if I have to end his life?" There must have been so many questions. And so there are times in our life where that is just not going to add up. Whatever that loss is, whatever that challenge is, it's just not going to add up. It's not going to feel like the Lord is doing much providing. Because remember, those things are just gone. The job is gone. The relationship is gone, or that family member is gone. And we might not find comfort in hearing this message that I brought so far, that the Lord provides even when he doesn't do things the way we want him to. And this story that's been chosen today, this story doesn't really compare, really, when you think about it, because in the end, Abraham got to keep his son. What is that? I didn't have a swap season in my life, right? I didn't get to keep those people who I loved so much. I would rather be standing here telling you today the story about how I won the lottery and got that money that I needed. I'd rather be telling you how God miraculously healed my grandfather from cancer. I'd rather be telling you how my uncle survived that heart attack. But church, that's just not honestly how that goes. So how does this story even compare? Well, that's me seeing me in all of those situations. That's me seeing how I want to add things up, how I think I should be provided for. See, God never promised to provide me everything I want, when I want it, or how I want it. God never promised to provide an easy path or a perfect solution, but God does make a promise in the story, doesn't he? God promised to provide. He promises provision. The Lord provides, even when he doesn't do things the way we want him to. So how could the story possibly help us? It feels a little bit like a non-answer. We wonder if God even gets loss. And so if that's you, if you're feeling that way, I want to tell you, he understands loss. Here's how I know. First of all, if you've lost a loved one, this is some advice that someone gave to me a long time ago. If you've lost a loved one, if that's what's been put on your heart today, I want you to know that God loved that person more than you. That's really hard to believe. Nobody loved my mom or dad more than me. Nobody loved my kid more than me. Nobody loved my uncle or my grandfather more than me. Yeah, God did. God created them. He knit them, right? In the womb, he thought about them before they were even born. He loved them so much, more than even us in our human amount of being able to love. And so the second way, the biggest way I know God gets it when we lose something is that he went through it. See, I chose this story for a reason, church, even though it didn't make sense at first. I have something very powerful to show you that God showed me. God is showing us a parallel into the gospel with this story, church. God was like Abraham, and Jesus was the perfect Isaac. See, think about it. The story of Abraham and Isaac, it's like a premonition, that parallel into the gospel. Like Abraham, God had to watch his only son walk up a mountain to his death. Like Abraham, God had to watch his only son carry the wood for his sacrifice on his back. But then God had to watch that sacrifice be completed, which meant watching his son die a horrific death. And what we see through that parallel between sometimes a least favorite, very uncomfortable story and the only story that really matters, right? Christ on the cross, what we're shown is that the Lord provides. He has already provided everything. He provided through Christ on the cross. Jesus provided everything we'll ever need for any loss in life. We have salvation. Whatever we're going through, we have Jesus Christ. So I know it's a lot easier to say, and it feels really good in church. So I'm going to help you put this into practice. Because we're human and we have natural tendencies, right, to forget things, even forget something so basic and so foundational that the Lord is our ultimate provider. We can forget that sometimes. We can forget that when we have these devastating losses. So I want to give you a tangible way that we can get through these times when it feels like you've just lost and there's nothing left. So I want you to remember two things. The first thing is that emotions are okay. Emotions are okay. Some of you needed to hear that today. The movie Inside Out, right? We needed sadness. She had a place. Everyone just wants to kick her to the curb. No, we need sadness. Some of you have some homework and you need to go home and watch Inside Out and then you can come back and get the joke. So it's needed. Emotion is needed to process those things. And as Christians, we grieve in hope. We grieve in hope. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 13 says, "But we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about those who are asleep, that you may not grieve as others do who have no hope." We have hope in Jesus Christ. Yes, we grieve, but we don't grieve without hope. So emotions are okay. If you're in the middle of something, it takes an incredible amount of faith in God's provision to walk up a mountain the way that Abraham did. So for this story in Genesis, we marked a spot. Do you remember that spot? Good note takers. Abraham said to his servants before going up to sacrifice Isaac, he says, "We will worship and then we will come back to you." Wow. Abraham's statement of faith is right there. Abraham is climbing up a mountain of problems. Each step, he's getting closer and closer. But Abraham fully believed that God somehow was going to send him back down that mountain with his son. The text is very clear to name all the people in the story down to the donkey. And it said the servants, right, the two servants and the donkey stayed behind. So when Isaac says, "We will worship and we will come back to you," who's he talking about? Isaac. He is fully convinced he is walking back down that mountain with his son. He didn't know how it's going to happen. Maybe God will produce the ram. Maybe God will stop him. Maybe God will make Isaac come back to life. He doesn't know. He doesn't need to know. And you know what? Maybe that's why there's not a lot of emotion in the text. Maybe Abraham had peace the whole time. And maybe that's the kind of faith and that's the kind of peace that God wants for you today. And so maybe we're struggling with things that, and God's just trying to do something in our hearts that we're holding on to it. And you got to let it go because God is calling you to God is calling you for an unshakable faith so you can have an unbelievable peace, just like Abraham. So that was the first thing. Emotions are okay. Second thing. Make faith your routine. We've talked a lot about faith in this today. So make faith your routine. We're human. We forget things. And so it helps to make things routine. Maybe you're not at my level of forgetfulness, but there is a natural just straying in the busyness of life when we lose our connection to God's truth. We must regularly, daily bond our souls to his word. Write it down. Repeat it. The Lord provides. Again, if you're a note taker, you're going to want to write down this verse, and maybe this becomes your verse. Put it on a post-it and stick it in the bathroom mirror. That's my favorite place for reminders. Or on the door, first thing when I walk out, my post-it says, keys, straightener, like, did I turn it off? And then a phone, wallet, So that's my post-it. An additional post-it suggestion would be that verse 14, on the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. Some of us need that. Sometimes our loss and challenges in life, they're like a mountain. And he's with us through that journey, through that entire mountain. And then, I don't go rock climbing. Anybody here a rock climber? I never get any. But I hear rumored from the rock climbers, the people who do the climbing of the mountains for fun. What is that? That when you get to the top, what you can see from this whole new perspective and allow God to get us to the top. You know, I think of the hymn, "It Is Well With My Soul." It's one of my favorites. If you've been in church world for a while, the story of this hymn is fairly common, but I'm going to retell it. So if this is not news to you, too bad. I love it. I'm going to retell it. And that way, if it is anybody's first time in church and you've never heard this, I want you to know about this hymn and to know about the author of this hymn. "It Is Well With My Soul." I always ask my husband to play this. He's the worship leader. At our church in Impact, I always nudge him, please play this. So the author of this hymn, Horatio G. Spafford, was a lawyer and a businessman. He and his wife, Anna, had five children. In 1871, their son died of pneumonia. Their business was lost in the Chicago fire. And on November 21st, 1873, his wife and remaining children were on a ship crossing the Atlantic from the U.S. to Europe, and it crashed with another ship, taking all four of his daughters down with it. If you've never heard that hymn before, "It Is Well With My Soul," I'm going to read to you just one verse from it. "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul." How powerful is that? That he's able to take this water imagery, right? When sorrows like sea billows roll. And after all of that in his life, he is able to sing out to God that it is well with my soul. He is making his faith to God, his understanding of the promise that the Lord provides. He made that his song. He turned it into a song in his heart. And I want you all to do that. Maybe you're not a musical person and it's not going to be a song for you. Maybe it's writing of the verse. Whatever it is, make faith your default setting. Like me with my keys. They were in the pocket the whole time. That was my default setting. I just knew. It didn't matter how distracted I was. So whatever happens to you in life, whatever mountain comes upon you, whatever phone call in the middle of something, whatever produce aisle just gets in your way, right? You're going to put the keys in the pocket. You're going to have your faith right there the whole time. And you're not going to stumble because it's been so ingrained in your heart. So the Lord provided on the mountain with Abraham, and he continued. Abraham continued to trust God and serve him, even through the death of his own wife and the challenge before him of being called to sacrifice his son. The Lord provided through Christ's death on the cross, and the disciples went on to face life-threatening controversy, preaching about Jesus. And it's that ultimate provision in our lives that allows everything else to melt away. Those family members who we love dearly aren't physically with us anymore. God's love and provision through Jesus Christ transcends through the physical world and forever connects us all to him. See, the Lord provides. And one last thing I'm going to share with you. The reality for some of you today is sometimes what God is providing isn't an easy way out. It's a way to keep you strong while you're in. You might not go home today and everything's perfect just because you heard this message. In fact, you might be challenged twice as much. So I want to say that again. Sometimes what he's providing isn't an easy way out. It's a way to keep you strong while you're in. And that's through Christ. And that's up to you all too to make faith your routine. So Isaac, who maybe should have been the most upset, right? Isaac willingly allowed himself to be bound, handed his dad a knife, watched God put him through that test for his father's sake, and still went on to be a follower of God, considering God the authority in his life, and later prayed to God asking him for children. His faith wasn't shaken either. And I think they were able to do those things and keep their faith because they all at one point had a powerful encounter with God and kept faith that routine for them. So I'm going to close by praying for you all because there are probably so many spectrums here today. I'm going throughout this message and maybe God just brought a name to you or a situation to you and it's something that maybe you just buried and you didn't want to deal with that because you didn't feel like the Lord was providing and now all of a sudden it's back up. Maybe you're currently in the middle of a mountain or God has shown you that mountain and you're right at the bottom of it going, I don't know. Or maybe you're somebody who you're wishing you heard this message like 5-10 years ago and we can celebrate that you've made it to the top of your mountain, that you're there and you've got this perspective and it's all because of God. It's all because of the sacrifice through Jesus Christ. And maybe for you, it's that we're celebrating because part of making faith our routine, right, is being able to look back and praise God and celebrate God for the times he's gotten us through. And you know, maybe some of you are just on the younger side and you think maybe I'm being a little dramatic. Oh, life can't be that bad. Well, for you, I pray that you take heed here and that you do make faith your routine even now. So if you're young, you're a teenager in the room, make faith your routine even now. And practice reading your Bible and those verses so that when inevitably you get up to that mountain, you're not going to be shaken. You're going to be so ready because your faith is right there.